Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Sfarim Chatter podcast. For this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be joined by Rabbi Basil Herring, who is the former executive vice president of the RCA and the editor-in-chief of the topic of this conversation, which is the new RCA Siddur, Siddur Avodat HaLev, which was published by Koren. And we'll be discussing the Siddur. So thank you very much, Rabbi Herring, for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So why don't we start off, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
As you may have detected from the way I talk, I was born in South Africa and learned in Keren Beyavne for several years before coming to New York, learning in Yeshivas Rabbein Yitzchak Elchanan, receiving smicha there, and then thereafter a PhD in Jewish philosophy. Thereafter, taught in a number of colleges and functioned in the rabbinate in three or four different communities in North America, US, Canada. And then about 15 or so years ago, going to the RCA, where I functioned as the executive vice president until about 7 years ago. And currently I'm, retired.
Okay, very nice. So the topic of the conversation, like I mentioned, was the new Siddur, the new RCA Siddur. So, how did you get involved in the Siddur, and how did it come about?
Well, as many of your listeners might know, back in the 80s, the RCA partnered with Art Scroll in producing the so-called RCA Art Scroll Siddur, which over those decades in the since then has become, of course, a very, very widely used in many different communities, not just in the modern Orthodox community, but in others as well. And it was a wonderful contribution to synagogue life and personal Fila in so many ways, and it set the standard for many, many other Siddurim. Back in perhaps 2008, we had conversations in which we felt that there was room now for a new Siddur. Time had passed. The Frum community had also moved in many ways to a different place where you have where you had a lot more knowledgeable individuals and communities, yeshiva trained and educated, and people who could learn on their own. And we felt that this would be an opportunity to give them a siddur which provided a lot of the source material that they otherwise couldn't find in a Hebrew-English siddur. Secondly, there was the question of women in tefillah, and of course, in the interim over the last 30, 40 years, many, many women had gone on, not just in terms of their day school educations and yeshiva educations, but had gone on to seminaries in Israel and had become much more sophisticated in terms of sources and in terms of davening and in terms of taking that commitment on. And so we felt that perhaps it was time that we could perhaps facilitate their being able to use the Siddur in a way which was A, grammatically correct when they were davening, and B, that kept them in mind in terms of many of the tefillahs that they would otherwise not find elsewhere. Beyond that, we also felt that there was a place for a translation that was perhaps more accurate and at the same time more fluent than might otherwise have been the case. And finally, I would say there are the questions of halacha. We felt that many halachic issues in tefillah, whether it was tachnun or whether it was halel, were not reflected necessarily in the existing siddurim, and therefore we felt that we could help that segment of the population to have a little more user-friendly aspect to it in that regard as well.
So you may have answered this just now, but I'll ask this to you just to make sure that this is what you'll accomplish and what you'll say is that, Why was there really the need for this siddur, though? Because they obviously have art scroll, the old RCA, and then the art scroll Hebrew English, and then there's obviously Koran's got the Sack siddur, and then I don't know, they have like 15 different editions type of siddurim. So, and there's other Hebrew English. I mean, why the need, and what was the market for another RCA Hebrew English siddur specifically?
Well, again, without discussing the other siddurim, you know, and their strengths or perceived weaknesses, we felt that there was a real need for a siddur that, A, reflected the American Orthodox community. Some of the siddurim that are out there were more European or British in terms of their halachas and practices. And some of them were simply not... should I say, reflective of the so-called modern Orthodox or Datilumi philosophy to the extent that those things are reflected in Tefillah and in the Siddur. So therefore, we felt that this was the time had come to provide that type of a prayer experience and that type of a text.
So I think that's something I should just jump on something that you said. I think it's important to mention here is that this siddur, obviously anyone can use it. I'm sure you would you'll tell me. But who, when you and whoever else, all the team of editors was working on it, who was the ideal user? Not ideal, but who did you have in mind that you were creating this for mainly?
Right. So in part, I've already answered that, but let me elaborate just a little more. I think we were talking about someone who is yeshiva educated, who is somewhat sophisticated, highly intelligent, whether or not fully informed in terms of the sources, someone who has been davening for many, many years, decades, all their lives, whatever, but who feels that, you know, perhaps my davening has become somewhat mechanical or somewhat rote or, you know, I just going to get through the davening. And we felt that that type of a balabos, that type of a community, that type of a shul would benefit from this. And so, you know, when we thought of who is the target group over here, it was that type of an individual who was knowledgeable, intelligent, smart, and wanting to deepen their tefillah experience.
So again, a lot of these questions obviously will be, you know, related, but I guess to start off as a broad overview before we get in-depth on the translation and the notes and all the various aspects of interesting aspects of the siddur, overall, what would you say is unique about the siddur and differentiates it? Obviously, it could be things that we already mentioned, but just to drive the point home on this specific point, just overall, what would you say?
I am somewhat biased in this regard, but I would say that probably the most significant contribution that the siddur is making to the genre of siddurim is the commentary. And what is unique over here is the combination of Torah sources on a high level, as well as academic research. Now, when I say academic research, sure, it should be clear that we didn't just take any academic research. In order to be included in the commentary or in the essays at the back, that academic individual, male or female, had to be a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. They had to be part of our community, our meaning the Torah community. And therefore, their academic research needed to be in line with the Hashkofa of the Siddur. And of course, if someone will look and see, those individuals are associated with not just Yeshiva University, YU in New York, but Landers, Hebrew University, Bar Ilan, Oxford in England, various European universities, where many might be surprised. Many users and many individuals might be surprised to know just how much academic research there has been on the siddur in terms of the development of tefillah, of specific tefillot, where they came from, how they were formulated, by whom, what was the context in which they came about, How that influence the actual formulation of these tefillot. I mean, I can give you dozens of examples at this point. For instance, the tefillah for the Medina, not for the state of Israel, but for the government, Aten Sholem Lachim. Where did this come from? How was this? What was the origin of this tefillah? It was the first time that this appears is about 10, 20 years before Gerush Sfarad. And we don't know who composed it, but it mentions specifically King Ferdinand of Spain. And in that particular formulation, it is safe to say that the Jews, they were feeling very exposed and imperiled, and they felt that they wanted to send a certain message to the ruling powers, to the king, Ferdinand, Isabella, whatever. We pray for you. We hope that you succeed. And therefore, we hope that in turn you will treat us kindly. And because of the particular formulation of that, of course, 10, 20 years later, Gerush Sfarad occurs, the tefillah goes, and it is immediately adopted across the Jewish world. Ashkenaz, Sephard, Venice, Amsterdam, Turkey, whatever, and it speaks to the heart and the mind of the Jews, wherever they were, in terms of their being in that situation. Now, clearly, this has a source in Yirmiyahu, in Pirkei Avos, and so on, Mishnayos, and so on, but that particular formulation. Now, when someone therefore says that tefillah, it's not just something out there. But we understand that it's grounded in a certain historical situation. It's beautifully formulated, and therefore we can appreciate it in that setting and subsequently as well.
Okay, so that's obviously very interesting. I'm sure you'll give many more examples as we go through the various aspects. I'm trying to think where we should go here, but I guess we'll start at the top of the Siddur, work our way down. So we'll start with the translation, and before we get to the commentary, where there's more to discuss. Obviously, the translation, not obviously, I should point out, this is interesting. The translation is not a fully new translation. It was, you took the Sola Pool, I think it is, if I'm pronouncing it right, old translation, and it was reworked, and I'm sure you can talk about this a lot better than I can. So maybe explain, you know, what the translation that you used was and how you edited it and why you made that decision to do that.
Right. So, first of all, this is not the first RCA Siddur. Neither was the original in the 80s, the first RCA Siddur. There was the so-called the Sola Pool RCA Siddur going back into the 60s. And Rabbi the Sola Pool was a very prominent Rav and scholar and a very accomplished and highly regarded individual. And he worked with numerous Rabbonim of the RCA at the time to produce that Siddur. And there are still shuls today which use that Siddur. It is not a full-use Siddur. It's rather for Shabbos and Yom Tov. So that belonged to the RCA, essentially. That was associated with the RCA at the time. And there were several editions of that in which, you know, as you go along and you see things that you want to change and improve and correct, so you do that as well. So we adopted that particular translation, and I would say that the translation that's in the Siddur right now is probably 80% the Sola Pool. The other is new, which we had a committee initially that worked on this, and then individuals specifically addressing particular issues in that translation. And of course, being aware also of the other more recent English translations, we compared and contrasted and looked to see to the extent that we could, on the one hand, be as accurate as we could be, on the other hand, to be as colloquial, to use the term, to reflect current English usage in a way that one who davens and uses the English is comfortable with that particular English usage.
And what does that, not in the context of talking about another translation, but what does this translation offer over another translation? What is its biggest milah, so to speak, to this translation particularly?
Perhaps rather than talking in generalities, I can talk and give you a couple of very specific things. For instance, when we say in the davening "Dever Cherev Rav V'Yagon," we translate it "Dever" as epidemic, rather than contagion, or rather than plague, and so on. Or the word "Cherev" we translate as violence, rather than sword. Now, cherev is a sword, but to the contemporary user or the contemporary davener, the notion of plague, sword, famine it's more difficult to identify with that. Let me give you another example. When we say "v'chaye ametim," so other translations the word "v'chaye ametim" will use the term resuscitate the dead or revive the dead. Now, that's not exactly correct, because to resuscitate the dead, resuscitate does not imply someone who's dead. Resuscitate means someone whose heart may have stopped beating, but they're not dead. Or to revive, you revive someone, but you're not reviving them from death. Whereas here, this is clearly a reference, as we understand it, to the doctrine, Rambam Yud Gimel Ikrim, of resurrection. So God, Kodesh Baruch Hu, is Mechaye Hamesim. He resurrects the dead who are actually dead, as he will do in due course. So here we have a case of more precise translation. And by the way, it's not Mechaye, it's Mechaye. The tsere here is a noun as opposed to a verb. So therefore, it's not Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, is not the one who resurrects the dead, but rather it's to be translated as he is the resurrector of the dead. I can give you many, many more such examples, some involving a change in girsa. For example, in the Yigdal, we will translate in the Siddur, V'chol notzar yore gedulato malchuto, it's translated as every creature shall make his greatness and sovereignty known. That reflects the Rambam's fifth principle, as we know, of the 13, and which is what exactly the Yigdal is referring to. So as opposed to the current text, which many Siddurim use, which is really a corrupted text, according to many, which say have a different girsa, and therefore that translation does not reflect the Rambam's Yud Gimel Ikrim. So the translation therefore strives on the one hand to be precise, on the other hand to be a more mellifluous, if that's the word. I'll give you just one final example in the Nishmat. There's a difficult phrase in the Nishmat, al achat mi elef alfei alafim. We cannot thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu even for one of the elef alfei alafim. So what is elef alfei alafim? So again, without mentioning the names, but other contemporary Siddurim will translate that as we can't thank God for even one of the thousands of thousands benefits. So this is not exactly how one talks in our time, or even to say for even one of the thousands. So how does this Siddur translate that? Achat mi elef alfei alafim. If you look at the numbers, it's for even one of the millions upon millions. Right? A million is a thousand. So achat mi elef alfei alafim would be one of the millions upon millions of the benefits that HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants to us. So, you know, these are the kinds of things to which the translation is sensitive.
Obviously, that's very interesting. So some very interesting examples as well. So now we'll move down towards the bottom. Actually, one more thing when we're in the text, we'll point out the one more thing is that many people may be familiar. Some Siddurim have, when you get to various Yom Tovim or different things, there's various, if you forget to say something, HaMelech HaKadosh, for example, or whatever, there's a halacha in the Siddur. So many Siddurim have it in the back. Turn to the back and there's like a halacha section. And here you don't have that, right? The halacha is in each location. So talk about that for a little and why, what was the decision to do it that way?
Well, I think mostly for convenience sake. If one is davening the Shemona Esrei and it's Aseres Yimei Tshuva and you said Hakel HaKadosh instead of Amelech HaKadosh, it's much better to have the halacha that you can refer to and say, oh, what do I do now? It's right there on the page, as opposed to now stopping, going to the back, finding the exact Se'if Siman in the back over there, and so on. So therefore, just in terms of the convenience, to have the relative halacha, the relevant halacha, right there when davening, we felt that there would be a benefit to that in that respect.
Okay, so now that we made our way slowly down, we get to the commentary, which, as you said, is the biggest thing in the Siddur, so most important, however you want to define it. So I think we'll just start with what are the main sources that you use and some examples of commentaries that you used or Rabbanim quoted, etc.
Right. So I think it would be fair to say that the most important influence and source in the commentary is Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik. He was my Rebbe. I learned with him at Shivas Ravina Yitzchak Ochanan. He was the guiding light and mentor for so many of the Rabbonim of the RCA. And therefore, much of his thought, his Chidushei Torah, his Hashkafa, is found in this Siddur. But it goes beyond him alone. I would say that the whole Brisk tradition is very well represented here, whether it's the Beis Halevi, whether it's the Netziv, whether it's the Meshech Chochma, whether it's Baruch Halevi Epstein, and so on. These are quoted at significant length. When we say quote, obviously being a commentary on the Siddur, it's very hard to quote them verbatim. So the commentary seeks to take the kernel of their ideas and to summarize them in as few as words as possible. Without quoting chapter and verse, because again, this is not an academic work, so we don't say, well, if you want to know where this chiddush came from, you have to go and look in the sefer or that source. So, but we do attribute it by name to the particular source. But beyond Brisk and beyond the Soloveitchik name and tradition, we did try to be as comprehensive as possible. So we will have ideas there from the Chofetz Chaim, from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, from the Pachad Yitzchak, from many of the sources that you won't find in other Siddurim. And we also try to combine medieval sources, whether it's the Rambam, the Rashba, Rashi, and so on, or obviously early modern and more modern sources as well. So the learning side of things, the Torah side of things is quite wide. And I'm sure everyone will say, well, how come you didn't quote my Rebbe? How come you didn't put in this yeshiva, this source, and so on? Clearly, we had to count the words, the space was limited, and we had to make certain, you know, difficult decisions to leave this out, put this in, but we did try to be as a representative as possible. Interestingly, some of that also involves women who have made their mark in Torah learning, who have dedicated many years to learning as well, And some of their comments are also incorporated. I'll give you one particular example of a very, very knowledgeable woman who is an academic who is now an emeritus professor at the Hebrew University, Shulamit Elitzur. Many of your listeners may not know her or may not have used her or read her, but a remarkable, remarkable woman. And there are very few people that I know of who come close to her when it comes to piyut in tefillah and the sources of piyut and analyzing piyut and so forth. So we have comments by her as well on specific things, and those in that camp too.
Yeah, I'm not personally. I don't know so much about piyut. I have a lot of friends that are. I mean, she's like the queen, or both queen and king of piyut. She like is like the titan in the field of piyut in the world today. So obviously, that makes a lot of sense. Also, Rav Kook I saw is represented a fair bit here, and many others. You know, the commentary, like you said, its sources are from right to left and left to right. Everybody in between. So. What is the style of the commentary? Obviously, that's hard in such a siddur, but was there a particular style that you were aiming for? And if there is it easy to understand, to see that, and what is that?
So first of all, wherever possible, we try to bring in the Gemaras, probably Yerushalmi or the early Midrashim, and to be loyal to what they were saying. Just on the pshat level, and when quoting the Rishonim, we try to take their sources and show how they extracted from their sources from the earlier literature, Mishnah, Gemara, Midrash, Halacha, and so forth. So therefore, it was grounded. We felt that the commentary needed to be grounded in the classic sources, but at the same time to be developed by the subsequent Mefarshim and Poskim in a way which showed the development here of these filot and how they reach the point where they are today. So I think that in terms of style, and I don't think you're referring now to the language so much as to the structure of the commentary, we thought that we would attempt anyway to show how the sources, starting out obviously with Tanakh, Chumash, and so on, were then developed over time and brought right, you know, into the Siddur, into the current form that it's at.
Right, and then I also mean, similar to this also, is that most of the comments that you actually wrote here in the commentary, are they pshat-based? Are they meant to inspire? Are they meant in a certain, what type were they supposed to be also?
The answer is yes. yes, we tried not to become overly drush-oriented. Yes, there are times when you do want to inspire. I'll give you an example. In the Birchas HaShachar, Mekadesh et Shimcha Barabim. So what is this all about? Why do we say it over there? Everyone knows there were times when Jews were persecuted and they couldn't say the Shema, so this tefillah of saying the Shema was put at an earlier point in the davening so that they could say it without being persecuted for saying the Shema. But it also was the time or the text by which people who were Mekadesh Shem Shamayim Berabim, i.e. martyrs who gave their lives, would say this bracha. And therefore, in the commentary here, we didn't just want to give the original context or the original structure, we also wanted to make it very current and relevant. And so we tell the story from Yaffa Eliach's Hasidic Tales of the Holocaust, of a terrible episode during the Shoah of women, young women, who were Moser Nefesh, but who insisted that they first wanted to go to the mikveh, and that the Germans, Yimach Shemam, allowed them to do so. And that they thereafter, once they'd gone to the mikveh, that they gave their lives under those circumstances. A horrific story. But we wanted to show how Jews over the centuries would be moser nefesh, guf v'nefesh, in a way that made this tefillah all the more personal and significant for one who is davening even today.
So that's a very interesting story. Interesting that you included it. Are there any other particular, not necessarily stories like that inspiring, but other examples from the commentary in other particular ways that you want to tell the listeners about?
Right. So there is a significant question that arises in the context of Zimun, Birkat HaMazon. When we say Rabosai Nevarech, who are we referring to? Who are the Rabosai? So most Siddurim, to my knowledge, that translate that term, translated as gentlemen, let us bench, let us say grace. Gentlemen. Now, what about the women sitting around the table? Are they halachically included in a zimun? So here we can go to Rav Soloveitchik. One of his Talmidim, Rav Reichman, put out a Rishimus of the Rav on Brachas, in which he points out that in one of his Shiurim, the Rav said, a woman cannot constitute a Zimun. She cannot be one of the three to make a Zimun when there are two men for her to be the third. But once she's sitting at the table and there are three men, then she is part of the Zimun. And in fact, to the extent that she doesn't have to bench, she just answers Amen to the Mezamein because she's part of the Zimun. She's part of that chabura. So therefore, when the mezamen in that instance is mezamen, the people sitting around the table, and there's a woman over there, he's not just saying, gentlemen, let us do birchas hamazon. He's including the women who are sitting there as well. By the way, we do also quote, and some might find this a little controversial, but it shouldn't be, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who says, and others, that three women are mezamein, right? But they cannot join two men to make a zimun, but three women can. And a man who's sitting there should also respond to their zimun. But the point here, and this combines the question of the translation with the commentary, and the commentary explains all of this. Why do we translate this not as gentlemen, but we use a much more gender-neutral expression of honored or esteemed colleagues, let us say grace, let us bench, because the women truly are part of it. And it's not just emotionally that the woman who worked so hard to put the food on the table should feel part of the Zimun, but in fact, halachically, she is part of the Zimun.
Very nice and very interesting. So one other thing about the commentary I want to ask you also, there's a number of comments from yourself, and I think maybe one of some of the other editors as well. So obviously you won't talk for them, but for yourself, you know, what was the decision when you put in something from yourself, and where did you get that from? Was that something you original Torah thoughts, or was that something that you got from somewhere else? What went into that?
It's a good question, and it was very subjective. Clearly, when there was something that I thought was a chiddush that I never found anywhere else in any of the sources, or an extension of an earlier source, which that earlier source didn't draw out and apply, then I put my name on it. If, however, it was more of a general statement, which was shared by many Mefarshim, then I would not put my name on it. Can I give you one more example? At the end of Birkat HaMazon, so everyone asks the question, and we're all bothered by this. What do you mean, Lo Ra'iti Tzadik Ne'ezav? V'zara Mavakesh Lachem. How can you say that? We know the whole problem of Tzadik V'ra'lo. Huh? Tzadik V'ra'lo. So how can David HaMelech say that in this pasuk? Many give their own answers. Now, what I did over here, and again, I put my name on this, because I took something that the Rav Soloveitchik once said in a shiur that he gave back in the 1950s. He said, part of what we learn from Yetzias Mitzrayim is that there is justice, but it doesn't happen necessarily in your lifetime. It'll happen to your children or your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren, right? And we learned this because the Jews who suffered, the Israel who suffered in Mitzrayim, they never saw justice when they died, but their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren did. So this was the Rav, and we quote the Rav, and this is what he said. However, he never applied it to this pasuk, which is a problematic pasuk. Lo ra'iti tzadik ne'ezav v'zaro mevakesh lachem. Yeah, I've seen tzadikim who are ne'ezavim, but v'zaro mevakesh lachem, that this should persist over the generations, this I've never seen, because in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does bring justice, if not to you, then to your descendants in time. So I said, the Rav didn't say that. He didn't apply to that pasuk, but I did. So therefore, I put my name on it. That type of a thing.
Very, very nice. The last thing that I'll ask you about the commentary, we touched on academic sources, but I don't know if there's something else you wanted to mention, any particular academic sources or other examples that you had of an academic comment, something that you incorporated in that regard that was unique to the Siddur.
There's so many brilliant academic analysts of Tefillah. It's hard for me to choose one, there's one that comes to mind off the top of my head, and that's Professor Septimus of Harvard, who's done a tremendous amount of work on Tefillah. So he pointed out, how do you, in the Shemona Esrei, how do you translate the phrase for gerim that we use over there for a ger tzedek? What is a ger tzedek? Right? Al tzadikim al chasim al ziknei hachaverot pelita al gerei hatzedek. How do you translate al gerei hatzedek? So, if you look in the translations of most other sidurim, they will say the righteous convert. The righteous converts. So he points out that if you look in the Rambam consistently, they're not righteous converts. Every convert is referred to as a ger tzedek, as opposed to a ger toshav. So it would be ger tzedek would be translated not as a righteous convert, but as a convert. And so this is an example, by the way, of something which may have appeared in one of the earlier gifsos of the Siddur, but now that we are moving to a new edition of the Siddur, which we can also talk about, we're now preparing and working on the third edition of the Siddur, as it was put out originally 2 or 3 years ago, but now we are looking to come up with subsequent editions. So this will, in fact, now be featured in that edition.
Right, because I just checked. It does say righteous converts now, so you're going to change that.
Right.
Okay, so that's for the commentary. Obviously, there's much more to discuss, but that's what we'll talk about now. And the other thing I think that we didn't get to that's unique about the Siddur and very, very important aspect, I think, is that the Siddur opens the regular way of a Siddur, but on the way of the book in the English way, it does have a number of essays that you've got 100 pages or so of essays of various Rabbanim and others. So first of all, why include essays in a Siddur? What was the purpose and what are they about? Who are the authors? Talk a little bit about the essay section.
As the name, Kishmo Kein Hu, as the name indicates, we are looking here to create a Siddur that will enhance Avodah Salev, Kavana, davening with Kavana. And most of the essays in the back, there are two types of essays in the back. One is Halacha, Rav Shachter, who is the posek for the Siddur, Herschel Shachter, has an essay there on Kriya Satorah, many of the detailed Halachas of Kriya Satorah. Also, there's a wonderful essay, if I may say so, by Rav Daniel Feldman, a Rebbe at Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, on ethical aspects of tefillah in terms of how to behave and how to do and what not to do during davening in the tzibur in terms of halachas. And he quotes hundreds of halachas in that regard. But for the most part, those essays in the back talk about how the importance of kavana, how to achieve kavana, not just in terms of davening, but in terms of when making a bracha, how to prepare oneself when going to daven, the importance of understanding mamash every word and trying to understand whether it was Chazal or whether it was the Rishonim or the Achronim, the Gaonim, what it was that they had in mind and therefore what I need to have in mind. So the focus of those essays in the back was really as an aid to the user to be able to find ways and to help them daven with a heightened sense of being Shiviti Hashem Tamid. So to sense, to be able to feel that is there.
Very nice. Okay, so I would point out, just pointing out that, first of all, the sources, I thought this was interesting. I mean, maybe other sources don't have it for the psukim or the chazal, where it comes from the psukim is on the side of the siddur. It's like in the margins, not like in the text or on the bottom. And also, just on the other side, the tehillim is printed in it's not in like the small two columns or very small miniature font. It's in a nice big font with a full translation as well in the back. Obviously, the Kriyas HaTorah for Monday, Thursday, it does not have translation. That is in the small columns. It's just filaining, so that doesn't. But the Tehillim is in full, which is something I wanted to point out. So I think the last thing to get to really as we finish up is. We really covered this, but just to ask it to you in a question form, just so you can focus on this specifically, is, you know, what will people gain from using the siddur? Obviously, what did you set out that people should gain from it? What do you think? What can you tell someone listening? Someone say, okay, this is, we already discussed, you know, there's so many other siddurim. So what in particular will I pick up the siddur to use? Will I gain from this siddur specifically?
Well, you know, it depends on the individual. Is this an individual who davens with Kavana, but wants to have more of a familiarity with the history, the development of Tefillah, where this piyut came from, who composed it, how has it changed, how did the girsa evolve over time, and so forth. So that person will, I believe, have great benefit because the texts here have been very carefully reviewed and selected in terms of the corrected texts. Someone who feels that it's become simply mitzvah anashim lumada, altas tfilatcha keva, and so on, that person will be helped, I believe, we hope, to daven with more kavana. And here, let me inject a personal note. I was a rov of kehillas for many, many years, yeshiva graduate, and I have to admit, it chata'ai ani maskir ayom. Over the course of time, one becomes inured to the beauty of tefillah, of so many of the tefillahs. And that, I must admit that for me, in many ways, you had to get through the davening because you had so many other things to do, and you were not given the opportunity to really grow in davening in your avoda. We hope that this will help people like that, people like me. And I must say that having worked on the siddur now for the last 10, 12 years, it has transformed my own davening in so many ways. And we hope that this will be the case with many others who would utilize the siddur and grow and be stimulated to do their own further analysis and to find their own chidushim and to see how all of the gedolim throughout the generations who were so machadesh in terms of Torah, in terms of sugyas in the Gemara and so forth, they daven three times a day and look what they saw in the davening and to see how they were able to uncover so many beautiful treasures that are there. And to be inspired, therefore, to find a deeper level in their own davening and to use this as a springboard for personal growth.
It's not exactly the same, but you reminded me of a personal story also. You said something personal, so you reminded me. I learned in Philadelphia Yeshiva, and I was actually in charge of the Sfarim there, and I got new Sidurim. Not the RCA Sidur, but we got new Sidurim, and Rosh Moshe Kamenetsky, Shlita, came in, and he went to one day, came to one of his tefillahs, and he takes a Sidur off the shelf. He has a Sidur. He doesn't usually take Sidur, certainly not a new Sidur. And I don't remember if I or someone asked him, you know, Rashiva, what are you doing? So he said that it's sometimes you like to take a different siddur with a different text. It breaks it up differently. It helps you to not daven by rote. You get to think a little bit about your davening because you're not used to where everything is, and it really helps you. It's not exactly what you were saying, but it reminded me. It's a similar kind. So I guess the last question really is, are there any future projects you're working on? And mainly regarding the Siddur, are you already alluded to, you already made a mention of one example of your revising it and putting out a new edition. So can you talk about what revisions you're working on right now?
Well, the problem is that every time I daven and I use this Siddur, I see something that I want to change and something that can be improved upon. Nothing is so good that it cannot be improved upon, as the cliche goes. Right now I'm working or trying to incorporate as much of the Piyut history as possible, whether it's the Keladon or whether it will be some of the Slichas Piyutim, which are beautiful in their own right, and which obviously have great antiquity going back to the time of even before the Rishonim. Many of them go back to the 5th century, the 6th century. Some of them we know who wrote them, some of them we don't, and there's some controversy amongst the various scholars on the subject. So to the extent that we can bring some, shine some light and clarity on those aspects of the Siddur, we're going to try and incorporate that as well into the text. Obviously, we have to work with the existing text. We're not creating a new Siddur, and we have to keep the pagination intact because those who already have had the first edition or the second edition, we don't want to create confusion as to which page to turn to if announcements are being made and so on and so forth. So we have to be very sensitive in terms of maintaining the structure such as it is while increasing and improving things. We are making changes to certain translations. We are updating some of the halachic areas in the Siddur that, you know, perhaps were not properly addressed in the first editions. So there's much work to be done. There's much work that remains to be done, and it's an unending process. So God willing, we'll be able to come out with this after COVID, and once the world comes back to some kind of normality. And we hope that people will be able to get back into shul and daven as they did before, but except better. And please God, this will be part of the armor that they will have and the ammunition that they will have that will allow them to reach the target.
Amen. So I will also obviously include the link if anyone wants to purchase it. I'll include it in the show's notes. From Koren, should be available in farm stores also. And with that, thank you very much, Rabbi Herring, for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for all of the wonderful things that you do. You're very, very to be commended for hosting this, and kol hakavod to you.
Thank you.